You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
You may have thought the Supreme Court settled this just a few years ago, but there's another case going before SCOTUS. It's Abigail Fisher, a white student from Sugarland, Texas, suing the University of Texas because she did not get admitted into the university. Fisher versus Texas, she says she was turned down even though her application was just as strong as minority students who got in. This is the first time the court hears an affirmative action case in about 10 years. You'll remember in 2003, there were two cases, Gratz versus Bollinger and Grutcher versus Bollinger, two students who sued the University of Michigan. The court ruled that public colleges and universities could take race into account when admitting students in order to ensure academic diversity, as long as they didn't quantify their process. But they couldn't use a point system, which had been used in the past. Lee Bollinger was president of the University of Michigan at the time, is now president of Columbia University, and he joins us now. And I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, I probably benefited from the point system, affirmative action system at University of Michigan before I graduated there. Lee, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You know, when the 2003 decision was handed down from the Supreme Court, Sandra Day O'Connor wrote that she guessed this her ruling would stand for 25 years, and it's been, you know, nearly 10 years. Why are we revisiting this?
Well, of course, when the court grants certiorari to take a case to consider, they don't give an explanation for why they've done it. So there are two possible theories, but they're only theories. One is Texas announced in the 1990s that they would admit students to the University of Texas according to 10%, the top 10% in every public high school in the state. So it's one of very few states' schools that adopted that. So one possibility is the conservative justices want to strike down or consider skeptically that 10% solution. The other theory is that they want to really take on the whole Grutter versus Bollinger decision and to potentially overturn it, which, of course, would be much more dramatic. But again, we really don't know because the court doesn't say at this point.
Richard Collenberg is also with a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, an author of The Remedy, Class, Race, and Affirmative Action. And Richard, in fact, we see what the effect is of removing race entirely from admissions decisions because there are a couple states like California that have already done that. What has happened in those cases?
Well, what the good news is that California and other states that have sought to, that have been barred from using race, have, to their credit, tried to find other ways to get racial diversity. They value racial diversity, and so they look at factors like the socioeconomic status of the family that a student comes from. And that's been fairly effective in the UC system. When Prop 209 barred the University of California from using race, there was an initial drop in the percentage of Black and Latino students from 18% to 15%. But in 2008, that had risen to 24%. So universities are able to grapple with the changes and accommodate them.
So, Lee Bollinger, let me put that to you. Let's say the Supreme Court does, in fact, strike down the use of race in any way in admissions decisions for a university. You have said that would be a nation-changing event, but in the case of California, it has turned out that they've found ways around that. Could the other universities do that as well?
Yeah, it's just not true. Many people have said that you can get racial and ethnic diversity by considering the socioeconomic status of an applicant. But many studies have been done on this and shown that, in fact, while it's very good, and we at Columbia and other universities want students from low-income backgrounds, that really does not result in racial and ethnic diversity. And there are reasons that are fairly obvious for this. The most important is that the population of people at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder are mostly white, and just by virtue of numbers, it doesn't translate into racial and ethnic diversity. And the numbers in the top universities in California prove that. So it's simply not the case that if you go to the major universities, to Berkeley and UCLA and so on, that they have anything close to the diversity that they had prior to Prop 209.
But, Lee, what is the role of the university in defending this particular action? I mean, if this is a societal problem, if our education system is such that we're so imbalanced in preparing kids for college, and there are so many racial disparities, why is that the problem of the university? Why can you solve it when somebody's an incoming freshman?
You know, there's several things to say about this. I mean, universities are just one place in society where we tried to address issues of inequality and discrimination and really slavery over several over centuries. And there are other parts. The military, for example, one of the things we showed in the cases from Michigan was that the military has a deep, deep interest in having racial and ethnic diversity because of the diverse population of its soldiers. But this has been done in business. It's now been done. This is, since Brown versus Board of Education, this has been a national effort to achieve an integrated society and to have people understand each other better. Beyond that, I mean, since George Washington, universities have been thought of as places where the American melting pot idea could be realized in part. Unfortunately, our K through 12 system is still very much segregated by housing patterns and certain public policies. Some cities are even more segregated today than they were in 1960. That should also be corrected. We should really work on that. But it's an important step for universities to also work on it, and that's what every American university, college and university, over the past 50 years has tried to do its part to help the society.
Well, Richard, let me put this to you. Does the Supreme Court have to justify retaking up this case in any way? Do they have to say that we've addressed the issues that were the concern of the court when they made the 2003 decisions in Grutter versus Bollinger or Gratz versus Bollinger?
Well, I think it's very clear that the reason the court took this case up is because there's now a conservative majority that is hostile to racial preferences. The handwriting is on the wall. So I think the question now becomes, you know, what do we do for those of us who do care about racial and ethnic diversity and socioeconomic diversity? What do we do to try to move forward? And Lee Bollinger is actually wrong on the UC Berkeley and UCLA case. I mean, there they did see a drop in racial admissions from 23% to 14%, but now it's rebounded to 20%. They're working their way back up. There are ways to address real socioeconomic issues that will reflect on racial diversity as well. So to me, that's what we need to be doing is focusing forward. Right now at the top universities, you are 25 times as likely to run into a rich kid as a poor kid. Now, some universities are making some progress on that. Lee Bollinger is doing a great job at Columbia. The number of low-income kids are increasing, but on the whole, that's not happening. And so it seems to me this case, which will result in no doubt in a constraining of the use of race, gives us an opportunity to look forward and say, let's devise a new kind of affirmative action, mm-hmm. one that deals with what is today the biggest obstacle in doing well, which is economic.
We'll see when the decision finally comes down, which would be months from now. That's Richard Kahlenberg, senior fellow at the Century Foundation, author of The Remedy, Class, Race, and Affirmative Action. And we spoke with Lee Bollinger, president of Columbia University. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.